This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
On Saturday, what most pollsters, politicos, and Bernie Sanders campaign organizers had been saying for days or weeks proved true, namely that the Democratic Socialist candidate for president had been well poised for victory in Nevada, the most diverse and most populous state of the race so far. Since the AP was able to call the race so early, the punditry had all the time they needed to speak to the moment. And while Sanders' win had been a consensus prediction, as Columbia Journalism Review's John Alsop observed, the analysis had an unmistakable vibe of alarm. John, welcome back to OTM.
Thanks for having me again.
You watched the TV news coverage of Sanders' win in Nevada. Tell me, what is the sound of the establishment clutching its pearls?
I don't know if there's an onomatopoeic word for that, but it was pretty much a full-blown freakout from that kind of establishment pundit class. And you had both personalities and hosts and guests who were members of the Democratic establishment on that network saying some pretty unmeasured things that were very critical of Sanders and his electoral viability. James Carville said that the results were going very well for Vladimir Putin.
I promise you, he's probably staying up watching us right now. How you doing, Vlad?
Nicole Wallace said the Trump and Sanders campaigns were kind of similar in their use of dark arts.
Of abusing the press, of bullying the press. I mean, what do we miss in terms of paying attention to a squeaky, angry minority and ignoring the majority?
Right. Chris Matthews likened the breakthrough of the Sanders campaign in Nevada to France falling to the Nazis during the Second World War.
And then General Renault calls up Churchill and says, "It's over." And Churchill said, "How can it be? You got the greatest army in Europe. How can it be over?" He said, "It's over."
That is like Fox and Friends level sniping. And Matthews got the same treatment from Bernie supporters and others leading on Monday to this.
"Senator Sanders, I'm sorry for comparing anything from that tragic era in which so many suffered, especially the Jewish people, to an electoral result in which you were the well-deserved winner."
This wasn't the first time Chris Matthews had been carried away with his hyperbole, was it?
No. In recent weeks alone, he compared Sanders to George McGovern, which I guess is the thin end of the wedge. He also said he reminded him of some old guy with some old literature from his socialist party. There was a rant after one of the debates recently, I believe, where he talked about Castro and the Reds.
"I believe if Castro and the Reds had won the Cold War, there would have been executions in Central Park, and I might have been one of the ones getting executed. And certain other people would be there cheering, okay?"
In your piece, you noted a report from Vanity Fair last week, which documented the growing friction between MSNBC and Sanders World, not just for the most bizarre Matthews-isms. Over the past few months, you might argue actually the last 4 years, there have been a number of more subtle expressions of general Bernie distaste, including this one from senior national correspondent Chris Jansing at a Las Vegas caucus site last weekend.
"Largely people of color. Of those, the majority are Latino, and they are clearly, at least from eyeballing it, strongly in favor of Bernie Sanders with Joe Biden coming in second."
Was she just out of breath, or is she gasping at the thought of a socialist nominee with broad-based support?
I couldn't speak to that exhalation and the motivation behind it. But certainly on the air, you know, there were expressions of real shock, I think it would be fair to say, at the broad-based support for Sanders. But he really kind of did win across the board. African-American voters, he came second behind Joe Biden. But he won among men, he won among women, he won among white voters, won among Latino voters. one among people who come from union households. That doesn't look like a shock, divisive, extremist nominee, and yet these were emotions and descriptors that you were seeing thrown at him, not just in coverage on Saturday, but for a period of months, if not years at this point.
MSNBC has always been ideologically inflected with a clear progressive worldview, and it is populated with a lot of the usual suspects of liberal Washington punditry. But mainly, it's been characterized by a sense of fairness and intellectual honesty compared to Fox, which is not that. I do not recall MSNBC ever before being exactly a megaphone for the Democratic National Committee in the way that Fox is for the Trump White House. Is there something sordid brewing over there?
This is a more fundamental philosophical challenge for MSNBC. Sure, MSNBC is a liberal network and has been for a long time. But, you know, in sort of American political discourse, there is a tendency to sort of spray the word liberal around very broadly, to use it to cover everyone from Bernie Sanders to Michael Bloomberg or Joe Biden, perhaps. I think particularly since the rise of Trump, we've gotten better in the media at passing ideological distinctions in a more fine-grained way on the right. And I don't think our coverage of the left has quite caught up to that yet. We're now seeing Sanders' worldview is very clearly ascendant. And we're not seeing that reflected in the makeup of panels on MSNBC, the network that is shaping the conversation on the progressive side of the spectrum. It doesn't feel like it's caught up to where the base of the party is. And I think that what Sanders' rise has done has exposed that kind of distance. There have been stories circulating this week in which we've learned that Phil Griffin, the president of MSNBC and other top brass over at the network, are taking his complaints seriously. There has been some suggestion that they will add more smart pro-Sanders voices to their pundit roster, although I think interviewing people from the campaign is not the same as reflecting ideological diversity in people you employ as commentators in-house.
Now, let's just say that the notion of a media-wide Bernie blackout, which his followers have been complaining about for years, is preposterous on its face. I mean, for one thing, the news covers the new, and Sanders has been giving the same speech for 35 years, so he doesn't often get in the kind of controversies that tend to attract coverage for other candidates. And he has been covered, and if he gets fewer minutes and column inches than his rivals, it is clearly doing him no harm. But not just at MSNBC, you do see evidence of contempt or nervousness or denial about his candidacy from the pundit class. And that reminds you of something, does it not?
Yes. I think that there is a clear comparison here between the shock that Sanders is popular among his party base and, you know, the shock that greeted the rise of Trump among his party base. You do hear some self-reflection on air. I feel like a couple of things I've listened to and seen on MSNBC in the last couple of days, I have heard pundits and anchors saying, well, you know, we were wrong in 2016. Maybe it's time for us to be a little bit more open-minded. But that tends to be then kind of followed by and dwarfed by another round of Sanders isn't electable, he can't possibly be elected skepticism. And it strikes me as complacency that we could have found ourselves in this position again so soon after we sort of said to ourselves, you know, we won't be caught out in the same way next time. It's not just pundits innocently giving their opinions on electability on television. Their judgments on electability have huge weight, and people watching consume them and think, well, these political experts are telling me that Elizabeth Warren, for example, is not electable, so maybe I shouldn't vote for her if I'm a Democrat who wants to dislodge Trump. There is, I think, a tendency or maybe a hope among people in the media and the pundit class that our reporting doesn't sort of exist in a vacuum, if you will. And actually, it has a real-world impact on the way people make political decisions. And if we're giving them faulty advice that's based on kind of jaded conventional wisdom, then, you know, I think that's a problem.
On the Media has had this conversation so many times over our 19 and a half year history. On almost every subject that we find fault with the media, it is just the latest version of a conversation we had had years ago. In other words, for all the work and thought that you and we bring to bear on the subject of media conduct, It's just a never-ending cycle of the same bad habits, wrong impulses, and just plain malpractice. So the final question I have for you, John, is why do we bother?
Well, you know, have to earn a living somehow, I guess. I'm relatively new to the media criticism business, and even I am sort of exhausted by the repetition of pretty obvious mistakes that we're seeing in this cycle, both compared to earlier in this cycle and the last one. So I do think, and with my optimistic hat on, certain lessons sometimes do get learned through repetition of the criticism. Small lessons maybe get learned, right? Like CNN added Alexandra Rojas, who worked on Sanders' campaign in 2016 and has been a leader of Justice Democrats, the left-wing Democratic campaign group. She's on their air pretty regularly. She was on State of the Union on Sunday morning, along with Rick Santorum and a couple of other, or at least one other conservative commentator. And just having her perspective there clearly elevated the quality and usefulness of that conversation, right? Because when the sort of rote Sanders skepticism came round, she was able to push back on it, and it created a debate and a dynamic. As we discussed earlier in this conversation, MSNBC, one would hope, is thinking seriously about making similar hiring moves. Small things like that can matter. But, you know, fundamentally, a lot of the time, you are seeing the same small, narrow group of establishment-minded people making the same set of establishment-minded mistakes every time an election comes around, and it's not serving news consumers particularly well.
I envy your optimism hat. I used to have one. Brooke knitted it for me, but I lost it. John, thank you very, very much.
Always a pleasure. Thanks, Bob.
John Alsop writes the morning newsletter, The Media Today, for Columbia Journalism Review. That's it for this here podcast extra. Don't forget, you can get an extra midweek dose of OTM by signing up for our newsletter at onthemedia.org/newsletter.